Welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast, presented by Gemini, your bridge to the future of money.
All right, everybody. Welcome back, all of you good, wonderful citizens of Crypt Nation. I hope you're having a fantastic morning, noon, or night, wherever you are in the world. You are certainly in the right place because today I've got an incredible guest, President of Jupiter, Xiaoxiao Zhu. Xiaoxiao, thank you for joining us here at the Crypto 101 podcast. And how are you doing today?
I'm great. Pleasure to be here. Look forward to the conversation.
Yeah, I'm greatly looking forward to it. Jupiter is something that I've used plenty and very, you know, it's just a seamless experience. I like to, you know, connect it to the Phantom wallet, and there's a lot of great stuff going on. And so for our listeners, I hope that you guys are using Jupiter to some extent or have at least looked into it, because this thing is awesome. It helps you get the best pricing across all of your Solana trades and so much more. But before we dive too much deeper into Jupiter and all the amazing things that you guys are working on across the entire crypto sphere, let's get you acquainted a little bit with our audience. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Xiaoxiao, how you kind of got into crypto, what your background was before.
Yeah, of course. So I've been in this role, I think, over the last 1 or 2 months, so relatively new. But the journey into crypto and to Jupiter has been, you know, a long way coming. It has been sort of a blend of high level strategy as well as creative performance, I would say. I try to always bridge different worlds. Over the last 5 years, I was at KKR, one of the leading private investment firms in the world with about $700 billion assets under management. Wow. One of the pioneers of the private equity space. I've been leading the global digital asset strategy while at KKR, as well as, working in the iconic TMT private equity team, working on some landmark deals, all like billion-dollar revenue companies. And before that, I worked for about close to a decade at the Boston Consulting Group, one of the leading management consulting companies, essentially advising Fortune 500 companies on company strategy and challenging topics, but also on blockchain, because back in 2016, I led some of the first blockchain projects that BCG did at the time. And so I had the pleasure to, at the time, work together with De Beers, the leading diamond producer in the world, on actually building up a blockchain-based asset tracking platform for natural diamonds, right, to prove end-to-end provenance. And that was at a time when Ethereum wasn't even properly operational. And so we had to actually build a permission version, a private blockchain at the time, which they apparently still until today use to track their natural diamonds, which I think was probably one of the first use cases of blockchain. And through that, I sort of fell down the crypto rabbit hole, although majority of my work was focused on essentially building out new digital companies or scaling very large companies while at BCG and KKR. In my sort of personal side, I've always stayed very much involved in the crypto side, been an angel investor into many projects and funds. That's how I got into sort of the blockchain space. And then maybe just one note also, in a previous life, I was actually a professional concert pianist.
Wow.
Be on stage. I played for George Bush Sr. and Gorbachev for the, 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall when I was a teenager, and played around the world on stages, etc. So I'm used to kind of switch contexts and challenge myself every couple of years into something completely different. And then now, yeah, I think it's a very big jump as well from KKR, one of the most prestigious sort of blue chip financial institutions on Wall Street, to kind of Jupiter, which I essentially joined in one world to build out as the leader in on-chain finance. And so we can talk a little bit more about that.
A well-built wardrobe is about pieces that work together and hold up over time. That's what Quince does best. Premium materials, thoughtful design, and everyday staples that feel easy to wear and easy to rely on, even as the weather shifts. Quince has the everyday essentials I love with quality that lasts. Organic cotton sweaters, polos for every occasion, lighter jackets that keep you warm in the changing seasons. The list goes on. Quince works directly with top factories and cuts out the middleman, so you're not paying for brand markup, just quality clothing. Everything is built to hold up to daily wear and still look good season after season. Guys, the coat I got from Quince was perfect for when I went home up north for the cold winter this holiday season. I got so many compliments. It was perfect, and it still looks like it just came out of the box. I'll be wearing it for years to come because the quality is that good. Also, they have so many awesome other things. I love their workout shirts. They have awesome polos. I got a couple button-downs to wear for date night, and even some sunglasses that look cool. I got all this stuff because the quality is great, and the online shopping experience for Quince.com is super fun. They literally have so many options. So going on their website and shopping is literally something that I truly enjoyed, and the products match. Everything is built to hold up to daily wear and still looks good season after season. Guys, the coat I got for my northern visit this holiday season was perfect. It kept me warm in the cold weather, and it still looks brand new out of the box, so I'm going to be wearing it for seasons to come. And guys, the price was spectacular. The online store is so fun and so easy. So if you're interested in that, you got to go check out Quince.com. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to Quince.com/crypto101 for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's Quince, Quince.com/crypto101. Free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/crypto101. New year usually means new devices. Phones, laptops, tablets, from grandma all the way down to the kids, or at least spending more time online. That's been a good reminder to actually think about digital security again. I've been using Webroot, specifically their Total Protection Plan, which is an all-in-one option if you want coverage beyond just antivirus. What stood out to me is that it combines real-time antivirus protection against things like malware and phishing scams, identity monitoring with alerts, and this is a big one, up to $1 million in expense reimbursement for eligible out-of-pocket costs if identity theft ever becomes an issue. Total Protection also includes tools like a password manager and web threat protection that blocks malicious sites before you visit them, plus options to protect multiple devices and even family members, all without slowing your system down or throwing constant pop-ups at you. So here's the deal. New year, new device. Whether you're upgrading tech or sticking with what you've got, now's the time to protect all your devices at 60% off with Webroot's trusted cybersecurity solutions. Visit webroot.com/crypto101 and get 60% off. Again, that's webroot.com, webroot.com/crypto101 for 60% off. This offer is only available through the Crypto 101 link, so make sure you use it. webroot.com/crypto101 and get up to 60% off their Total Protection Plan. This year, choose protection that's right for you and live a better digital life with Webroot. Are you interested in effortlessly growing your Bitcoin portfolio? I sure am. The Gemini credit card earns you Bitcoin back on every purchase. Use it just like any other credit card when you buy lunch, gas, or even just your weekly groceries, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight to your account. All that with no annual fee. It's the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stack. Guys, you've heard us talk about Gemini now every single episode, and we love and appreciate that they've been a sponsor because we use their products, whether it's the exchange or the card. They have been leaders in the space for so long. So if you're interested in earning crypto rewards for your everyday spending, go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. See the link in the description for more information regarding rates and fees.
Issued by WebBank. Some exclusions to instant rewards apply. This is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. Check Gemini's website for more details on rates and fees.
Yeah, there is a lot to talk about with tokenization and RWAs, or real world assets. It seems to be the flavor of this year. Certainly, it was also quite big last year. But I think what I see in terms of just the institutional adoption, if you know the conversations going on at Davos this past week, everybody wants in tokenization. I even saw Larry Fink say, I think it was just this morning or yesterday, that we, you know, it's critical to get tokenization. And he kind of did allude to getting it done all on one blockchain, which I thought was interesting. I'm not sure if I agree with that. I think there's, you know, potential for many blockchains to proliferate and to have interconnectivity, but that might be a different discussion. But wow, so KKR, you know, you had this incredible, you know, Wall Street gig. you know, you could have retired there and worked this, you know, really, you know, predictable lifestyle, but you said, you know what, I'm going to go and I'm going to jump feet first into the unknown. And I think that's really cool. And I want to know a little bit about, I mean, there must have been some philosophical drive. There must have been some sort of spiritual connection to crypto in the future that I'd like you to kind of outline for our guests. Because I think when they see these, you know, big Wall Street moves come into this, the frontier of finance, it inspires them. And so we want to know a little bit about what inspires you about crypto.
Yeah, I think, look, I think on a philosophical level, I've always fascinated about this, like, almost like parallel stack or architecture onto which like financial activities can be built, which empowers people and the users mm-hmm. as opposed to kind of gatekeepers, right? And you know, when I was at KKR, you know, I had the privilege of leading the digital asset task force. So we invested out of KKR's balance sheet into some of the leading crypto VCs at the time. So I had the pleasure of, you know, meeting most of the founders of the crypto VC space, I think 5-6 years ago. And we ended up investing in the likes of Dragonfly, Parafi, Bitcraft, Joe Lubin's fund, Ethereal Ventures. So we were like large LPs in all of these funds, very close strategic partners. We shared deal flow, and obviously, you know, expertise was very important from the early stage space. But then we also ended up kind of investing into more institutional digital asset leaders such as Anchorage Digital, right? So Diogo and Nathan. So we led, as KKR, led essentially the last round, you know, and we did a lot of work there. But over time, it was also clear that, you know, we deployed probably 9 figures into the space, which was tiny for KKR's, you know, proportions, but relevant for the crypto space. But it never justifies more than a small part of actually my time. So when you are essentially in a business like KKR, you always have your core investments, which are $1 billion Web2 or TradFi portfolio companies or investments. And whether those companies grow 3% or 5% matters always more than whether you get like a 5x or an 8x on a much smaller business in crypto. And so just size mattered a lot more. And of course, you know, you're just talking about very different profiles in terms of growth as well as volatility, right? In private equity, totally. You know, more mature industries, you want to have predictability, right? Because you have to underwrite an investment thesis. You have to project out financial cash flows for the next 5 years. And you're trying to be quite close, right, in your predictions, which is basically impossible in crypto because innovation still happens so fast at the fundamental stages, both, you know, technically as well as from a regulatory perspective. It's very difficult to predict how fast or how big new markets can literally spun up, right? Prediction markets didn't exist, you know, 12 months ago, and you know, all the rage now, right? Yeah. And so I think, you know, that was sort of one part of the realization. The second part is just like by looking much more deeply into the evolution of the digital asset space, also became clear that I would say two main things have really changed or inflected in the last 12 to 24 months, which was not possible before. The one is just, as you alluded to, right? The line between on-chain and traditional finance has really been blurring in the last 1 or 2 years, right? Bitcoin, you know, really emerging as a national corporate treasury asset. Stablecoins, not just a, you know, crypto settlement currency anymore, but increasingly a global payment and remittance rail, right? Also used and considered by banks and legacy and Web2 players. On-chain venues such as Jupiter or Hyperliquid, you know, rapidly taking share from centralized exchanges. You can see that in the market share numbers, right? You know, literally growing from 0% market share about 2-3 years ago now to like close to 20%, right, of the global spot or perp volumes, which is very significant. And then new essentially on-chain primitives like tokenization, tokenized assets, or prediction markets literally popping up and reshaping how capital markets or information markets can function, right? Mm-hmm. I would say the second observation is just the underlying crypto technology is very clearly growing up. And we are basically, I think, in this fundamental shift where the value creation in the sector really is shifting from the infrastructure level to the application layer, right? And you can really see that block space used to be, you know, difficult to come by, right? It mattered where you actually built. But now I would say with the proliferation of layer one and two blockchains, those block spaces is becoming increasingly commoditized, right? Like they simply work. You don't have to think about them anymore. If you want to build a trading app, it just makes a lot of sense to do it on Solana or Base maybe, right? But if you're trying to, you know, a little bit slower moving assets, Ethereum is your place. You don't have to think too much about it. You know, they increasingly the cost and the speed really starts to work, right? And because of that, I think you're really seeing this new wave of on-chain applications generating significant revenues and user adoption. And then that basically informed my thesis, right? That whether you invest your capital or time, the differentiation and the modes of value creation through businesses in crypto is shifting more and more towards distribution, brand, user experience, as opposed to, you know, how scalable is your blockchain, how fast is it, or how cheap it is, right? Yeah. And I think all of this, I think culminating in this core belief of mine that what we now at Jupiter call on-chain finance, not Web3, not just crypto, right? There needs to be something new, not even DeFi, but really like on-chain finance. It's a fundamentally better way to do finance because, you know, TradFi is huge, of course, and it kind of works, but it's still opaque, inefficient, and built essentially on trusting gatekeepers. Like banks, like asset managers, like KKR, right, and intermediaries, but really building on chain, fully on chain of crypto rails, which was not possible 3 years ago, right, but now it is, really empowers, right, at scale, right, open, transparent rails, globally accessible from day one. You can bank the unbanked, you know, across the globe, without having too many barriers, self custody, self sovereignty. Permissionless and trustless, right? I think these are sort of the new pillars of what a financial new architecture could look like. And the world simply doesn't know this yet. So I think a big part of, you know, what I'm going to do at Jupiter and with the team is to literally prove and communicate to the world that on-chain finance is a better for everyday people, right? And then there's different ways to go about it. So all in all, I think why I made that shift, I wanted to be on the front line of this fundamental shift and not just watching it from the old world.
No, Xiaoxiao, that makes a ton of sense. And it's really good to kind of get that perspective. But I want to move over towards the conversation around Solana, because of course, Jupiter chose to launch its home base on Solana, not on Ethereum, not on Ethereum L2, not on Bitcoin. You know, what was Jupiter's decision-making process? And I know you came in a couple months back, and Jupiter's been around for much, much longer. But I'm sure you understand, you know, sort of what the founders discovered and loved in Solana.
Yeah, I think, look, at the time, there were like many different L1s and L2s, right? And, you know, even until today, I think the Solana ecosystem, even today, is still in a hyper growth phase. You know, it's not about, you know, just testing infrastructure anymore. It's about true application level, you know, adoption and dominance. And so I think it just speaks volume to the fact that, you know, Solana is probably best thought of as a high frequency global financial coordination layer, right? Because of its sub-second finality and, you know, really negligible fees by now, it is the only chain where you can build something like Jupiter, right? A decentralized trading venue or exchange that truly rivals the speed and feel and low cost of a centralized exchange like Binance or even New York Stock Exchange, right? It's perfect for, you know, high transaction, high throughput sort of active finance. So things like, you know, spot trading, perpetuals, derivatives trading, high velocity stablecoin payments, and composable DeFi loops where you need to move, you know, capital across different protocols in a single transaction, etc. Which I think that is just by now, I think, proven out, right? With that Solana is best positioned. It's, you know, where most of the on-chain high velocity volumes are happening today. And then obviously Ethereum on the other hand side, you know, has a different philosophy with different technical specs, right? Has chosen a more modular path, you know, pushing users more towards, you know, the core Ethereum as well as various layer twos, which is great for decentralization, but it can create a more fragmented user experience, right? And whereas Solana stuck to a more monolithic, unified approach, making it simply easier to kind of aggregate user experience and liquidity, which is very important, right? If you want to have like really a, almost like Web 2-like experience. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely a place for Ethereum, right? To really, you know, I'm good friends with Joe Lubin. I admire what Vitalik and they've built, really this global settlement layer for high value, slow moving assets. So it's kind of the chain for TVL, if you want. And then Solana is really becoming this global execution layer for the world's daily financial activity on chain. And yeah, I think that's sort of on the sort of infrastructure side of things. But ultimately, I think the user, ultimately in the end, the non-crypto native user should almost not care, right?
Right.
On which chain certain applications are built, right? It should not matter. I think it's the job of the applications of the new sort of on-chain protocols and super apps like Jupiter to kind of really build out a user experience to abstract away these kind of differences. And so, for example, at Jupiter, we're, you know, we are by far the largest trading venue by volume and user count on Solana. But we've been also building out the TVL side of the business as well, which is more, you know, almost like B2B, slower moving, more sticky capital, right? On-chain money market type of products like Jupiter Lend, which equally works, right, technically on Solana. And so ultimately, I think the more variation, the more competition there is with great products, right, that highlight different parts of the technical stack, the better it is for the user. Ultimately, they can choose from great products and great experiences. And ultimately, I think if we all have this mission around on-chain finance, we should all, like, you know, go, you know, fight together, right? Be allies, grow the market, grow the pie, and show to users that doing things on-chain simply can be better, right? And you shouldn't be have to kind of trust centralized gatekeepers.
I love it. And I completely agree with that that ethos. And I know you all just launched a new stablecoin, relatively new stablecoin, Jupe USD. And we want to understand a little bit of behind why you created the stablecoin and what makes it different from others.
Yeah, I think first of all, like, you know, stablecoin, everyone talks about stablecoin, everyone uses stablecoins. But I think just to put it into some numbers, right, why this matters, I'm sure most people know this, but like today we have roughly 300 billion of total stablecoin supplies in the world, right? They generate around 30 trillion in, you know, transaction volume per year. But then what that supply actually translates into is about, I think, north of $10 billion of net profits for the key stablecoin issuers, which is Tether and Circle,
yeah,
which, if you do the math, is essentially between 3-4% of the total supply, right? Which is the same as the underlying T-bill yield, right, that these companies have by issuing the stable coins and holding the underlying T-bills. And I think if you really think long and hard about this in a target state, you shouldn't have to just keep all of this to the stablecoin issuers. And this is, I think, the fundamental challenge that we set ourselves, right? That we wanted to kind of like create something where the issuers should not keep all of the interest from the assets backing these coins. But with Jupe USD, we're essentially utilizing tokenized BlackRock T-bills, you know, through our partnership with Athena, to flow that yield back essentially to users throughout our ecosystem of products, right? And so we want to combine institutional grade safety with Solana's high speed rails. And we want to kind of like, you know, create this like new generation of on-chain first stable coins to evolve from simple trading tools into a global financial coordination layer that should be objectively superior and more rewarding than traditional bank deposits or even like traditional stable coins.
Yeah. No, I mean, stable coins have absolutely been probably the talk of the town, I guess you could say, in DC and in the broader crypto market because of the Genius Act that just passed here in the States. And so that was really big. And, you know, our Secretary of the Treasury, Scott Bessent, said that he thinks crypto stable coins can grow from, like you said, around $300 billion today in market cap to 10x, to over $3 trillion over the course of, I think, the president's term. And so that would be big. And I'm sure Jupe USD would get a little share of that. But it seems like there's a big... or a sizable share, not a little share. But it seems like there's a lot of conversation right now, specifically with the Clarity Act around this yield component. And, the Coinbase side of the camp is now saying, we don't want this bill to happen because the banks are trying to block the yield getting to the end user. But the banks are hogging all the yield. So, and you've been on the other side of Wall Street where you want the yield and you want the carry and all that kind of stuff. So how does this all kind of come to bear on Jupiter in regards to, are you guys going to keep Jupiter yielding to the end user? Does it matter what happens with the Clarity Act, or are you guys focused on just other jurisdictions? How do you kind of pair this?
Yeah, I think traditional stablecoin issuers, they're sort of in the back end, right? They have to manage the reserves. There's a mint redeem facility, but they traditionally don't actually own the ecosystem or build out the ecosystem or the distribution layer for these stablecoins. That's why Circle's partnership with Coinbase has been the probably most important partnership, right, in Circle's history, which you can also see in the financials. I think this is like one of the advantages, right? Like by essentially building and improving and in building out this like on-chain super app that Jupiter is today, and having essentially a native stablecoin, snapping fully into our product suite and essentially being able to create value back to the ecosystem and the users, right? Mm-hmm. And so that is very difficult to replicate for pure stablecoin issuers, whether it's legacy or sort of newer ones. And it's also difficult to replicate for pure exchanges, right? And we want to kind of build that synergistic flywheel to the benefit of the ecosystem, right? And so, as I mentioned, like we strategically launched JupBSD to solve this major flaw in the current stablecoin, market structure, right? While giants like Circle and Tether are very effective, it's very convenient. There's huge network effects. The yield generated from the treasury bills backing them flows entirely to the issuers, right? Not to the distribution partners, not to the users ultimately. We want that value, right, to flow back to our users, not necessarily as yield generating stable coins, right? But we can, there's a lot of things that we can innovate on, that we can experiment on to kind of like build that value into our ecosystem. So for example, right, we have designed JupBSD today to drive kind of a flywheel of usage within our ecosystem. So users who deposit into the Jupiter Lend protocol, which is kind of our Aave-like, lend borrow permissionless protocol that we've built on Solana into our super app. So users who deposit JupBSD, you can very easily swap your USDC or your USDT on our app, right, directly into JupBSD. And if you then deposit the JupBSD into the Jupiter Lend interface, you'll receive additional rewards, including a significant portion of the yield generated from the underlying BlackRock tokenized T-bills, which is structurally an advantage, right? Like on Jupiter Lend, you have all kinds of different stable coins, right? You can borrow against them, you can lend them out to get additional yield. But most of the stablecoins offer the yield that goes into the Jupe Lend protocol comes simply from incentives or the difference between the lend and borrow rates. Essentially, it's a dynamic market, right? It's set sort of automatically at any time. Whereas we can add a third layer of essentially yield to towards the basically deposited stable coins into our Jupland if it's in denominated in JupUSD, which is the underlying T-bill yield, which should be up between 3-4% today and is backed by collateralized by BlackRock. And so structurally, we should be able to give users who deposit JupUSD into Jupland higher yield. I think a second, you know, very, you know, second source, I would say, type of very exciting things that we want to experiment on and do to drive more usage and benefits to users is, for example, today, if you hold your JupUSD in the Jupland pool, you generate yield. If it was a centralized exchange or any type of, you know, CFI world, you would have to, if you want to use your deposit that you earn yield on, into any sort of trading activity, let's say limit order, right? You want to call, put a low limit order on Solana, right? In case the price drops, you don't know when it gets triggered. It might be triggered in 2 days, but it might be triggered in 6 weeks, right? If you have your capital essentially in the limit order, or let's say a prediction markets bet, right? You don't know when it actually cashes in. You don't traditionally get any yield on that while it's sitting there. We want to make that possible. If it's denominated in JupUSD, we can make that basically snap back immediately. So you don't even have to take the underlying JupUSD out of the Jupland pool. You can just directly deposit a deposit token into the limit order. And through that way, for whatever time you are essentially waiting for the limit order to get triggered, you actually continue to earn yield on your stablecoin, right? And these are the type of DeFi composable, you know, I would say, user experience innovations that we're very excited about, because ultimately it's better for the users, right? There's no reason why this shouldn't work, and it's only works because you're on an on-chain trading venue like Jupiter.
You know what's wild? How many guys hit their 30s and suddenly everything feels harder than it used to? Your energy dips, the focus isn't there anymore, and gym progress stalls. The conversation almost always turns to testosterone. So I've spent a lot of time digging into this, not just the headlines, but actual studies, ingredients research, and talking to people who've gone down the TRT road. And once you really understand what traditional TRT involves, it includes lifelong injections with needles, shutting down your body's natural production, fertility concerns, and it really makes guys pause. That's why I've been paying attention to Mars Men. It's designed as a TRT alternative, not injections, not synthetics, just a stack of well-researched ingredients like Tonga Ali, zinc, and boron that are used to support healthy testosterone function. I've seen the science behind these ingredients, and I personally know guys using it who say they love how steady their energy feels. No spikes, no crashes, and no needles. For a limited time, our listeners get 50% off for life, plus free shipping and 3 free gifts at mengotomars.com. Mars Men is made in the USA, third-party tested, and backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. Over 91% of its users report higher energy levels, and the reviews speak for themselves. And again, for a limited time, our listeners get 50% off for life, free shipping, and 3 free gifts at mengotomars.com. That's mengotomars.com for 50% off for life, free shipping, and 3 free gifts. After checkout, make sure you tell them that Crypto 101 sent you.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. And there's so many exciting things going on. It's hard to keep up. And if we kind of shift gears from stablecoins to a little bit of the RWA and on-chain initiatives, I know, for instance, Superstate, you know, some of the products that they offer are tradable through Jupiter Exchange. And these are like tokenized Galaxy stock. Or tokenized T-bills and all that kind of stuff. What's kind of your guys' mission around tokenized equities and real-world assets, and what's on the product roadmap?
Yeah, I think it's a huge future addressable market that we're very excited about. You know, as the on-chain super app, I think Jupiter, we welcome any sort of innovation on the supply side, right? So tokenization of any kind of financial asset that makes it, you know, tradable, you know, you can do kind of financialization on top of the tokenized asset. As long as it's on Solana, I think it's automatically, you know, Jupiter becomes one of the main distribution and trading venues. We welcome any kind of innovation and additional supply that comes here. I think it's kind of a marketplace, right? Ultimately, users and demand will decide, right? And they will look at different parameters around you know, redemption, price, costs, different things. But ultimately, we welcome any kind of tokenized assets. I think a lot of innovation now is going on and has to go on the tokenized stocks side of things. I think, you know, a lot of X stocks, you know, tokenized equity is already tradable. I think we're a major share of the trading volume that actually happens on Solana around tokenized stocks already. But it's still minuscule compared to actual stock trading volumes, right, on the primary liquidity venues and the brokers that essentially offer them. And so I think a lot still has to happen on the innovation side. It's not something that will be solved in 2026. I think it's a multi-year journey, but I foresee kind of a much bigger innovation cycle where it's not just about tokenizing existing assets that have their primary liquidity venue off-chain, right? Like US stocks today. But I think what's much more exciting over time is fully moving the capital formation process on-chain end-to-end, right? Where you can almost like think about companies with real, you know, adoption and cash flows opt to not just go IPO and then later on a tokenization of the stocks, but fully
flip the script.
Flip the script and really like go through the whole underwriting, the capital formation, the going public process, fully going it onto on-chain processes and venues. And that way, I think then problems that we still today are grappling with around, you know, how do you represent dividend rights, right, in these kind of tokenized stocks, or voting rights, right? And sort of governance rights, which basically it's kind of leaves you with the derivative of just the price, right, that is today traded. I think more and more of those will be solved over time, but I think it's just truly to move like significant volumes fully on chain, you have to really almost like flip the script and think end to end, right? Capital formation. And that's something that we're, I think, quite excited about. Alongside, I think, yeah, stocks obviously is one of the things that a lot of people are spending a lot of time on. But also I think, you know, credit is definitely something that there is a lot of movement on the institutional side. I'm having conversations with, you know, very senior people at very large TradFi institutions. I think there's a lot of effort and innovation ongoing to kind of tokenize already, you know, also private credit, moving them on chain. And I think once they are on chain, I think there's like a series of things that you also have to, you know, solve through around, you know, KYC permissions requirements or redemption requirements, you know, by lowering sort of the threshold for investment thresholds. You ideally also want to have different redemption sort of periods. But I think these are some of the operational processes that can be solved. We can find ways around that. So I probably see, you know, credit almost like a little bit closer to where, you know, it could be. Stocks, as I mentioned, I think there's like a longer journey that we have to go through before on-chain can be properly treated as the primary liquidity venue. And then over time, I think it will be much harder around stuff that is not as unified, like real estate. It will take much longer to kind of find proper solutions to kind of really do this at scale. But overall, it's very clear, right? Stablecoins is just tokenized dollars, fiat currencies, tokenized commodities, you know, should be is already happening. And then some of these other asset classes, very clear that more and more of that will come on chain. And, you know, if you're the essentially distribution layer, you know, on chain, we welcome all kinds of innovation.
Awesome. So, no, that makes perfect sense. And Xiaoxiao, I'm curious, just looking ahead for Jupiter specifically in 2026, what is exciting you the most on the product roadmap? And where do you think things are going to land here for Jupiter?
Yeah, I think to be very clear, right? Jupiter is relentless at shipping new products. Nobody ships like Jupiter is kind of a proverb in the Solana ecosystem that people simply know. And just to illustrate that also, like, from history to presence, and then we can talk about the future, which is like 18 months ago, Jupiter was simply a web-only DEX aggregator on Solana. It was the largest DEX aggregator, but it was only web, right? And only Solana. It fulfilled a very critical function by stitching together the fragmented liquidity across the hundreds of DEXs, but it really made Solana very usable, right? Routing to the best place at any given time, best execution, best price, etc. Today, we're way more than this, right? Today, Jupiter is the largest on-chain application platform on Solana by users, by trading volume, and by TVL. You can basically say we are the largest on-chain super app itself. I would like to sort of think about Jupiter, you know, and a good analogy is Robinhood, fully on-chain, and probably pre-COVID Robinhood, because you kind of have a very loyal retail user base, right, that love the product and keep using it. And assets that are being traded are essentially long tail assets, meme stocks.
Yeah.
At the time. That was the claim to fame. And that was also how we started most Solana trading, if you want. But over time, we really managed to build a whole flywheel around that initial use case, right? So today we're the largest, you know, we have the most diversified on-chain business with 12 different revenue generating products and business lines, and really growing, right? Creating a flywheel for users, liquidity providers, token holders, and partners. Jupiter generated, you know, close to, you know, actually more than $1 trillion of annual trading volume across spot and perps last year. You know, hundreds of millions of fees to our liquidity providers, hundreds of millions of net revenues, which is also going into buying back the token. For example, we also built one of the largest ecosystem hubs on Solana with hundreds of partner integrations, generating hundreds of millions of revenues for partners that are integrated with Jupiter, and making it just super easy to integrate for developers to integrate into the Jupiter APIs. Largest perp DEX on Solana, largest DEX aggregator. We're growing very quickly our lending and borrowing protocol, JupLend, as mentioned. We have our own stablecoin. We're growing out a prediction markets venue as well. Some very exciting announcements coming as well. And then what many people also probably don't know, we are like one of the largest, now also one of the largest validators on Solana, because we realized, you know, it was just important to not just build out the user experience, but also really control the execution environment ultimately on that. So it's really a full stack team, a full stack company, not just on the front end layer, but really down to the RPC execution as well. We want to simply have the elements together to offer the best possible experience to users on chain, right? And so that's, I would say, in a nutshell, what Jupiter is today. What if I think about the growth areas, right? And this will apply, you know, to 26 and some of those potentially also beyond. I see like a couple of very exciting growth areas, which I think I and our team are especially sort of excited about. There will be a lot more news coming out. We'll keep announcing new things. So there's some alpha in there, but I won't reveal too much. The first thing, like, you know, if you think about how can you actually 10x something that already, you know, generates a large share of whatever happens on Solana today, right? So just from a market sizing perspective, strategy perspective, you have to think about different vectors where the future growth can come from. And if I think about that, right, most of our users are on a desktop experience, right? A lot of developers are integrated through our APIs. But the one vector we believe is very important to actually onboard the next 10x, right, of users that may not be advanced, sophisticated trenchers or Solana warriors or traders, right? We call them, let's call them normies, right? I'm adopting the crypto speed here. How do we adopt sort of really onboard normies? It has to be by the mobile app, right? And so the mobile app as the delivery mechanism for the masses, and really creating synergies across existing product flywheel, like, you know, we have a lot of, I believe we're making a lot of progress on our mobile app already. It should be one of the best experiences on Solana. You know, the cheapest for sure for any of your swapping activities, and also the fastest compared to the peers. But we're just at the beginning, right? We're proving that out. But just by bringing some of the things that we already have on desktop, like perps trading, right? We are the largest perps trading venue. It's today not app native, right? And so some of these things, I think, or prediction markets, I think we can get a lot better. But it, these are the type of things, I think, just making it as simple and as comprehensive as possible for someone to come into the app and just immediately like making sense of it and being able to kind of, you know, move part of their financial life onto the app, I think is a 10x growth opportunity for sure. I would say the second one is onboarding new user groups. Not via just mobile, but via strategic partnership integrations. That's sort of more the institutional side, if you want. I think we can do a lot more. We've done incredible announcements of just in the last couple months, right? We're integrated with Coinbase, with Robinhood, with Anchorage, as well as Uniswap, even.
You wouldn't
think that. They're all integrated with Jupiter's trading API. To kind of offer the best of Solana assets and wallets to their users. And I think this is a very, very scalable way also for us to kind of like really onboard, you know, other ecosystem, you know, in crypto, but also like players outside of crypto itself, right? To kind of like offer all the beauty and variety of Solana products. I would say the third one is just further building out the on-chain super app flywheel through new product launches. What has happened just in the last couple of weeks is, for example, JupUSD will bring back value to our users, but also prediction markets, right? We launched the beta with Kalshi. You know, there's like some big announcement in future also coming. We want to add more, simply more variety and more depth to the prediction markets that are today already on Jupiter. And then fourthly, I would say, if you think about just you doing a lot of trading already today on Solana, you make money, right? You kind of generate yield, etc. But what do you do with it ultimately, right? So building some bridges towards real world utility and real world value, we believe will be also the next step, which is very important. So we'll have some exciting announcement coming around the payment stack as well, which we call Jupiter Global. We want to offer better on ramp experiences there. There will be a payment card coming out, unified Jupiter IDs across all of our use cases. And then very exciting, what we are working on is like also just QR payment, and which will be a big, I think, unlock, especially in emerging markets where, you know, you don't want to necessarily go through the costs of a credit card network. And even for unbanked merchants or small merchants or users in emerging markets, a lot of them are actually transacting today with QR payments, and we simply want to make your on-chain asset balances, you know, usable also in those areas. I don't know, in Vietnam, buying your noodles by just scanning a QR code via the Jupiter app and being able to pay from your on-chain balances, I think will be extremely powerful, right? To kind of like bring more utility to our users. And then, yeah, finally, I think if you think about the 10x growth vectors, there has to be something around omnichain execution, right? We'll have some announcement coming there as well, because as we spoke before, ultimately on the question Ethereum or Solana, ultimately for crypto people are very tribal. We care a lot about on which chains transactions happen or don't happen. But ultimately for the Web2 user, you know, if you want them to kind of use crypto applications or on-chain finance applications, they don't give up, you know, thing about on which chain it is. And so we do want to kind of like try to solve and abstract away as much of those kind of constraints as possible to kind of just offer the best of on-chain markets towards those users, regardless of the chain.
Well, it sounds like there's no shortage of things to do here for you in 2026. You guys are expanding growing your user bases, growing the amount of touch points with your customers, and overall becoming just a great steward of the ecosystem by running validators, investing in builders. And so it's really encouraging to hear from you all the amazing things going on at Jupiter. And so look, Xiaoxiao, we greatly appreciate all the detail that you've been able to share with us here today on the Crypto 101 podcast. Last question is just in terms of where folks can go to download the app, where can people stay in touch on social media, or what websites can we link in the show notes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the closing statement is just use Jupiter, right? It's the best way to kind of test out, give us feedback. It's available. The mobile app, I would say, is probably the best. You know, if you are not already a Jupiter user, it's in Android as well as Apple stores. It's the best Solana wallet out there. You can do a lot of the stuff. Now we abstracted away a lot of the usual pains that you have around it. Everything should be possible with QR codes. You can log in with your Google or Apple ID, so you don't have to necessarily create a seed phrase. And then, from app download to kind of having stable coins in your wallet should take less than 10 seconds. I do this a lot, onboarding, you know, friends and leaders in TradFi, and seeing just the surprise in their eyes, right? That something like that is possible fully on chain. And you shouldn't even care about whether it's on chain or not, just the speed and the elegance of the UX should speak for itself. But there's still a lot to sort of work on. And obviously follow our X account, Jupiter Exchange, and LinkedIn as well. I started LinkedIn group for Jupiter just a couple of weeks ago. Didn't exist, but now we're live. So we're trying to build that out. On X, we're already one of the largest accounts out there. But I think, it's also important to show, I would say, the TradFi world that, you know, we're serious and there's like a lot of cool stuff coming, and people should take note.
I love it. No, that's incredible. LinkedIn, that's something that most crypto folks aren't doing. But, you know, coming from a $100 billion fund, $700 billion fund, you know the importance of networking on LinkedIn. Look, Xiaoxiao, we really appreciate all the time that you spent with us here today. And we hope to have you back on soon again to talk about some more big updates. And so you let us know when works, and we look forward to hearing more updates in the future. Take care.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Speak soon.